the way that you communicate with folks based on their role and how they're approaching the problem is different, but making no okay is something that I'm a fan of just talking about. Like, hey, no is okay. If this isn't a fit for you, that's all right. We're going to save both of us time.
This is Taking the Lead, a podcast for B2B tech professionals, leaders, and executives who want to learn from female icons in the tech industry. In each episode, host Christina Brady interviews women who are driving revenue for some of the most respected tech companies in the world. Are you ready to get inspired?
Welcome to She Sells Radio. I am so excited to bring you a powerhouse guest today who is a seasoned revenue leader in the SaaS space with over 16 years overall experience. She's got 10 plus years in executive leadership as well. And this is something I'm very excited to talk about, how this has tied in with her sales journey. She has a unique background as a musician and an artist. And I know we're going to find some creative approaches that she takes with sales, given that different background. So Christina Brady is my guest. In addition to being a seasoned revenue leader, she's also the host of Taking the Lead podcast and the head of development for an incredible organization called Women in Sales. Christina, welcome to She Sells Radio. I'm so happy to have you here today.
Oh my gosh, thank you. I'm so happy to be here. That was such a beautiful introduction. Thank you.
Oh, I was like, gosh, this sounds great.
Well, and you're also a fellow boy mom, which I love. We were talking about that in the pre-chatting because yours is older, right? He's 5. You said 5 and a half?
Yep. Yeah. If I say 5, I get in big trouble. So he's 5 and a half.
Yeah.
Very specifically, he is almost 6.
Every month counts.
How old am I today? I'm like, you're still 5 and a half, honey. It's like, I'm not 6. I'm like, no.
We were connecting in the pre-chat about it. You said it just gets more and more fun because mine are 9 months and 3 and a half years, but you're like, but they're also very gross and it gets more gross. So I'm preparing.
It begins gross and you're like, this has to be where it peaks. It couldn't possibly get worse. And then it does. And then they keep getting older and they get grosser, funnier, cuter, cooler, more talkative, also more gross. And so we'll see how that evolves.
It all balances, right? It's the law of the opposites, right? At least there.
Gross, but hilarious. You're gross, but you can dress yourself. So,
I mean, I'll take it. I will take it. It counts. So tell us about, I'm so excited for today's interview because you have a unique background and you've got a lot of expertise in areas our listeners want to know about, everything from building sales culture to leadership to how do we land and expand bigger deals. So whether you're listening and you're an entrepreneur or you're in B2B sales, you're going to get a lot of good from this conversation. But I'm really curious to start, how did you go from musician, artist, into the seemingly unlikely path of B2B sales? How did this all come about?
You know, it's a wild ride. It's a wild ride. I grew up first in a family full of artists. My dad was a world-renowned opera singer. My mom was the pianist of the Chicago Symphony. I grew up just immersed in arts and culture, which there's a lot of similarities, funny enough, I'm going to geek out for a minute, between music and art and math. And it's actually been shown that in your young life, if you engage in the arts, it actually helps to develop your scientific and your mathematic brain. And so I think it's because my mom plopped me in front of a piano at 2 that I'm able to function at all today. So growing up in an artistic family, you know, and college hits and you have these dreams. I spent a lot of time doing improv at Second City and Improv Olympic. And I thought, this is it. My ultimate dream was I want to be on a sitcom. I just loved the idea of that character development and the arc. And it's like, it's not the pressure of being in movies, but I was like, I would love to just have a decent role on a sitcom and just make my way doing that. And then of course you get older and you have bills to pay and life hits and life happens. And I actually got my start. I started working in insurance right out of college for MetLife because I needed a job. I had to pay my bills. And you get to the point where, you know, back in those days, wasn't that long ago, but back in those days, I remember every night, you know, I'd have to go to the office, which was an hour away from where I lived. And 6 to 8 o'clock at night, they'd order us pizza. And it was crappy. And they would slam a pile of paper leads down on your desk. And you would sit there from 6 to 8 o'clock and you would just call on old, aging, whole life and universal life policies, trying to convert them, which really means you're calling people in the middle of dinner and then reminding them of their own mortality that is imminent, and then asking if perhaps, given that information and the time of day, they'd like to give you some money. And it didn't go very well.
Wow. This was after working on, this is interesting. But I remember days like that, like boiler room.
Oh, so yeah, you'd be on the road all day, you know, going to people's houses, and then you'd get back to the office and they're like, you got to be here until at least 8 o'clock at night, but don't worry, there will be pizza.
Wow.
It was bad pizza. And so I learned I love to sell and I loved talking to people. And, you know, you talk a little bit about a creative approach, which we can dive into, but I found a way to get to people by calling out the obviousness of what was happening. You know, before they could tell me you interrupted me at dinner, I'd be like, did I interrupt your dinner? They're like, yeah, you did. And I was like, why did you answer? Like, you know, and that would get a laugh, right? Like, they're not expecting you. And so I immediately figured out, like, maybe there's a way that I can be really good at this by not being like everybody else, but just connecting with other human beings and showing them that I have good intent. And I didn't like selling insurance, but then I wound up moving over to Groupon. And what I didn't realize at the time is, you know, 2009, 2010, I broke into tech as a full cycle AE at Groupon. So that's how it got started.
Wow. So what you said, you found that you loved sales. What did you love about it? So you're in this, you know, this high pressure probably environment. You're working long hours. I know you mentioned like kind of breaking through and using that human approach to connect. But what did you uncover that you actually loved about sales along the way?
I always say I'm a little bit of a glutton for punishment. There's the idea of we're two people. And when you're making any kind of a sales call, you are innately on opposite sides, right? Like, we have been trained to lean away from salespeople. I mean, consider the last time that you were walking down the hallway of a mall, right? And you've got those little stands that are sitting there, and there's some guy or gal with lotion ready to squirt on you. And as you're walking by, they're like, did you watch it? You're like, you like throw the X up, like, don't, right? Because there's this idea of you're intrusive. And even if I like what you have, I don't want this interaction. I don't want to be forced to do something uncomfortable. But the more I realize that everything in life is sales, right? Whether you're a bartender or a server or directly selling or a doctor, like, there's all of these same elements. But what I like is just when you're in a sale, you're just calling it out. You're calling out the fact that, hi, this is uncomfortable. I'm calling you to sell you something. I'm just going to talk about that at first, but I'm going to try to approach this a little bit differently because I've done my research and I think this could actually help you. And so I learned you can have the intention of helping somebody. And if your intent is pure, and if it really is helping people to see that, to me, I got a little bit addicted to that. Like, it just, I thrived on hearing people make that shift. And then every time I was hung up on or sworn at or threatened, like the number of times in my career that someone's been like, I'm going to sue you. I'm like, I dare you. Like, it fuels your hate fire. And you're like, the next one's not going to be like that. The next one's not going to be like that. So, you know, you do have to be wired a little differently, but
yeah. Well, you said something there that I think is very relevant. And it's so funny. Yesterday, I was speaking for a conference on AI in sales and just what's happening there. And you know, everyone wants to talk about that now, but the word intent came up again and again and again. And I think for anyone, whether you're in sales or you're an entrepreneur and you're doing your own sales, there can be that level of discomfort if we feel like if we feel that resistance from someone else, right? And which we normally do when we're going into the sales conversation, because sales has been sales of sales. And people have learned to kind of put their hands up, like you said. But what part of the conversation was, and I heard you say this in a different way, was when our intent is pure and it is truly to help, then that kind of dissipates on the other end. That resistance dissipates on the other end. So I'm curious to hear from you, because I know for our listeners, they care about truly serving people. They want to grow financially. They want to leverage sales or their business to grow. And they love that they can help people with what they're doing. So how else do you communicate that intent, that it truly is to serve? Is it Is it really about just calling it out at the beginning? Like, let's just talk about what this is, but hey, I've got something different here. Or is there any other way that you personally work to communicate that intent that you truly are there to serve and help?
Yeah, I say to you, infuse your intention in every stage of your sales process. And the first thing I want to call out is what we're talking about today. This isn't easy because the pressure to perform is immense. And the pressure to perform can really hit on your intent because you may say, look, I have the intent to help. If I have the intent to help, that means I have to disqualify customers. It means I have to disqualify customers that maybe want to buy from me, but for the reasons of responsibility, they're not a right fit, or they're going to churn, or the product doesn't really address their needs. And when you are in a high pressure performative environment, like so many people are right now, and you feel like you're fighting for your job and you're fighting for your livelihood, it is very difficult to put that aside and try to maintain that really, really good intent. And so I just want to call out that what we're talking about isn't easy, right? It's difficult because you're having to decide between, do I do the right thing? Or do I pay my mortgage? Or feed myself or feed my kids. Like, so that does exist today. But for me, the intent is always first, I'm going to see if there's a problem to solve versus ask you leading questions to get you into my camp. And so many discovery conversations and demo conversations, heck, even so many elevator pitches that I hear are so leading and so accidentally or deliberately manipulative. And your intent becomes very, very clear. Like, I'll give you an example. Let's say that you're going in to do a discovery conversation and you say to yourself, you know what? My intent is truly to learn about you and see if we can help. But you know, you've got a deck prepared to hard pitch them at the end of this discovery. And you had that prepared before you entered into this phone call. And your prospect is going to realize that. So that pure moment of discovery that you wanted to have with them, where you say, like, look, I'm not going to push you to buy anything until I understand your needs. And then I'm going to customize my pitch based on what you need. And then you pull up a pre-prepared deck at the end of your discovery. You've just gotten rid of all of that intent. And it was, I spent all of this time and you were going to present me what you were going to present to me anyway. So why put me through the song and dance? And when people say buyers are smarter today, that's what they mean is most buyers know what a sales process is. They know when you're doing a discovery. They know the purpose of the demo. They understand that you are not throwing out your best and final offer the first time you say that. Buyers know. They know. And so calling it out and really, truly following the intent and having a good end in mind for every stage is really, really important. And as you build that relationship, you'll show them that you mean what you say. But it takes a little while to build that trust just because so many people have ruined it over time. So many bad actors and bad sellers have gone out there pretending and even saying, like, look, my intention is pure. I want to help. And then they ask you 15 leading questions. And you're like, these have nothing to do with me.
Wow. There's a number of things that you spoke to there that I want to dig into. One is that pressure environment and how do we stay pure in our intent when there is this pressure from leadership, from quota, or we're an entrepreneur, we're running our own business. It's like, we got to hit numbers this month. I appreciate that you said that it's hard. What other thoughts do you have around that? I'll add one other thing and then I want to hear from you on this. I did a co-hosted webinar with a former client and now a colleague of mine, Ian Koniak, great guy. And we talked about this concept that I'm going to be including in my book called Abundant Selling versus Scarcity Selling. And I come from a background having been in those high pressure environments of what I would call scarcity selling, where it's all you're thinking about is just, how can I get this sale? How can I close this deal? Leadership is standing at the leaderboard waiting for you to come back in from the demo to write down your number, and they look at you in disappointment if you don't hit it. And I remember that, and I literally developed health issues in that type of environment. So now, as my own boss, and for me, a lot of it is spiritual connection, which is like, I've got to be grounded in something outside of this, so I don't feel that anymore. But I know so many of our listeners probably do. So any other words of wisdom for someone who's like, yes, like, I care about people. I want to feel good about saying no to someone if it's not a good fit for them. And simultaneously, I've got this either internally imposed pressure or pressure from my higher ups. What else can people be doing? And is there maybe a bigger macro solution to all of this that we should be thinking about?
Well, what you're getting, I mean, pressure can crush coal or make diamonds, you know? Mm. And so it's not the pressure that's the bad thing. It's the way that it's applied so emotionally and so threateningly. Like in most cases, when I'm talking to sales reps or CSMs or frontline leaders or even other executives, it's not the pressure to perform. It's the pressure of if you don't perform, you're going to lose your job, lose this, get demoted, this, that. So if we start on the macro level, leadership has to learn that you cannot motivate human beings through fear, because on a biological level, fear actually shuts the brain down. You cannot learn if you are afraid. You cannot thrive if you are afraid. And what we are talking about is a core level of fear, where if you think about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, the kind of fear that we are talking about is the fear that is directly hitting the very bottom of that pyramid, which is my psychological safety, right? If you attack my psychological safety, you remove my foundation to perform for you. So you may think that high pressure performance tactics are actually making your people better, but you are handicapping them in their ability to actually be successful by providing that level of fear. And so one, it's what actually does motivate people. When folks are not performing, telling them simply to do more or threatening their job isn't the key to that. It's either fixing a skill issue, a will issue, a behavioral issue, or a fit for the role issue. If it's none of those four things, sometimes it really is a mixture of the market or the economy. Sometimes your product isn't amazing as you think it is. Sometimes people don't want to buy your product in a down market. And that is a real moment to look in the mirror and decide, can we not sell this because it's unsellable and people don't need that? And we have tech debt. So on the macro level, if you're looking at your organization right now and things aren't going well, guess what? You can look at which of those factors it is and then go do something about it. And the one thing you shouldn't do about it is look at the people who are spending every single day at work building your vision and tell them that if they don't do it more, they're going to lose their job. They're going to lose their livelihood. Now, there's obviously performance issues that should be managed, properly doing performance improvement plans, things like that. But in most cases, a lack of performance, simply saying do more, doesn't get it done. Now, if you're on the front lines and you're hearing this from your leadership and you're feeling this absolute immense pressure, there's a couple of things that you can do. One, you can call out the fact that the pressure is not helping you. You can call out the fact to your direct boss, especially if you trust them, and say, I'm feeling an unbelievable amount of pressure to work. And I want to let you know everything that I'm doing. And I would love your feedback tactically on what I could be doing better, because I don't understand how to translate do more, better, faster right now. So could you give me some real constructive feedback on what I could and should be doing better right now? Mm-hmm. Force the business to get out of their emotional brain and into their logical brain by always pushing back and asking for documentation on, don't just ask me for more. Don't just threaten my job. What specifically do I need to do? And what support and resources can I expect in that? Do I need to go out and teach myself how to do this? Are you going to spend more time with me? Is this going to be enablement? Is product going to fix this one issue that keeps stopping us from being able to sell that brand new product? Is PMM going to connect with us on better talk tracks and messaging? Things like that. So being able to take what's emotional, recognize that and say, I don't know that that feedback is super helpful, but I want to get better. I want to improve. I don't know any sales rep that doesn't want to make money. I don't. So that motivation is already there. It's just how we motivate people gets lazy when things are stressful.
Wow. Okay. That's so good. So helpful. And I love the specifics of what you can say to leadership, which I know is something you speak to about managing up, right? As well as if we are leading the company or we're a founder and exec, what does that look like when you're looking to help your team improve performance? So I love that. I want to ask you about, this is something that I know a lot of our audience is interested in, is building and cultivating relationships with clients and using this land and expand type of approach. And I'm wondering from your perspective, let's say somebody is maybe newer to thinking about things in that way. What does that mean? What does that look like? And are there ways that you leverage, I'm sure there are, but I want to hear from you, your creativity that you bring from your artistic background or communication skills, which clearly you have a lot of. So what could that look like and how could we stand out in that strategy?
The number one, I'm going to say life skill that I learned from being an improv performer for a decade is the most critical thing that you can do to build a relationship is learn how to listen and understand. And the number one thing that you can do to destroy it is not listen and not understand. And so, you know, you're on stage with a troupe and you have to hear everything going on all the time so that you can react. And then that reaction is, oh, well, how do I want to show up in this conversation? Do I need to bring some levity to this conversation? Do I need to show up a little bit more seriously? Do I need to increase the emotion? Do I need to decrease the emotion? Do I need to introduce some facts? Do I need to help you paradigm shift, right? But if I'm not actively listening, one, human beings know when other human beings are not listening to them. And when somebody isn't listening to you, you don't trust them. And not only do you not trust them, you actively try to avoid them. And so many folks, when they are in a sales environment, neither individual is actually listening to each other because all they're thinking about is what they're going to say next. And if you've ever been to a bad improv show, you can tell when that's happening because what starts to happen is every person on the stage decides they want the laugh. They want to be the funny person, right? And so I'm going to keep finding moments where I can say something funny and get the laugh because I'm egotistical. Whereas the great performers will understand where the joke is and know their place to get the joke, even if that's not them. Right. So maybe in this scene, I'm not the person saying the funny thing, but I'm the person that is the joke's on me. Right. Maybe I have to play it straight because I'm recognizing that right now you've got the joke and I'm going to elevate you and give you the joke. And so that right there is kind of that give and take in building a relationship. So the first thing to do is be the person that genuinely listens and then make sure that you understand. So if you ask your prospect a question, listen, show them physical cues that you are listening. And that looks like one thing I always say, show people your hands, right? Mm-hmm. If I can see your hands, you know that I'm not typing. I'm not writing. Even if I'm taking a note, sometimes if I'm writing something down and you keep talking to me in your mind, you're like, should I pause? Do you want me to, right? There's that moment where then there's that little bit of trust broken, right? Mm-hmm. So one, show me your hands. If I'm talking to you and I'm in a real conversation and you're either in a video chat, if you're in person, whatever it may be, how do I show you that I'm actively listening to you? And then when you're done speaking, even if it's just a phone call, it's thank you so much for sharing. Obviously, I want to repeat back what I heard and make sure that I really, really understand so that we can move forward together. So what I heard you say is XYZ. Did I capture all of that? Yeah. Did I miss any of that? Yeah. All right, well, let's talk about how number one is really impacting you, right? So I heard you and now the conversation is being led by you because I'm taking something that you said, I'm drilling further into that. Now on my end, I can be doing that for a reason because I want to, via inception, guide you to a place where I'd like you to be in order to have the conversation around this product or service that we want to have. But I want to make sure first that I fully understand what's going on with you. If you set that tone with your customers, they will do it back to you. So it's always this idea of I'm stopping, I'm listening, I'm not interrupting, I'm showing you that I'm listening, I'm pausing. Here's what I heard, right? That starts to build the relationship of, okay, this person's really listening to me. And again, human behavior is when one person leans in, you also kind of lean in, right? Like if you trust, you'll physically start to lean in, right? And so it's that, how do I get people to lean in every single conversation? Then there's gut checking that what you showed them or told them they care about or make sense. So I heard you say that a really big pain that you're having right now is XYZ, and that's showing up like this, like this, like this. And what's hard about that is I know it can be a struggle, but what's good about that is a lot of our customers were experiencing that. So we know that it's solvable if we can agree on the problem. I want to show you something really specific about the product. And I want you to tell me if you understand one and two, if you feel like this could actually help, right? So now I'm tying what I'm showing you to what you told me, which again, all of it comes back to, I listened to you. And because I listened to you, I didn't have a preset script that I'm walking you through. You told me something. I went, oh, you know what? Hold on. Let me pull this off the shelf. That's way more interesting than, great, thank you for sharing all of that with me. It sounds like we can really help you out here. Let me go into my demo and walk you through all of my features. And you've just disconnected everything that you've done. So this idea of storytelling a demo and pulling things out, it all goes back to listening and caring.
Mm. Amazing. Amazing. You said, and the irony of this, the part I'm laughing about is I'm literally taking notes while you're talking. And then I'm like, oh. Which is how I...
That trust. We have that trust.
Have that trust. So leading someone to the next step. So obviously this is probably most going to apply when someone is in a longer sales cycle. There's multiple meetings. You talked about kind of guiding someone along that path, but also being very conscious of listening and truly checking in before we guide them. What could that sound like? One of the things I appreciate about what you're saying here, Christina, is like you're giving such good little blurbs that someone could take and apply to their own. I don't like to use the word script, but let's just say their own, you know, their own conversation. I like a script as guardrails, not as handcuffs.
Yeah.
But you're very good at these soundbite moments of how can we of what to say. What could that sound like when we're transitioning someone like to the next step? So let's say we did the discovery. We pulled something specific off of the shelf to help them. I like, let me show you this one part. Does this seem like it would help solve your problem? How would you guide someone to that next step then? I'd love to just hear a little bit more of that from you.
Yeah. One thing that I would say is you're obviously spending a lot of time and you don't have a lot of time trying to solve this problem. And you can solve this problem in one of two ways. You can buy a solution. That's why we're talking. Or you can build a solution. Do you feel like I've told you enough that makes you feel like perhaps buying a solution similar to this? We haven't decided on this yet, but buying a solution similar to this might be the way to go, right? And so there's this, how do you get these? It's a Sandler concept of throughout the sales process, how do you get these small yeses that feel like upfront contracts? And it's giving you permission to continue. Because for me, I always go back to the psychology of how anybody buys literally anything. Like any decision is made in four ways. One is, do I have a problem? Okay. The second is, do I want to solve that problem? The third is, do I want to solve that problem now? And then the fourth is, do I want to solve that problem with you? Mm-hmm. And what so many salespeople do because of the pressure to perform is somebody acknowledges, you know what? I have a problem to solve. That's step one. And they say, well, then boy, do I have a sassy product for you, right? And we go all the way to step four. Versus every human being has problems that they aren't going to solve or aren't going to solve now. Like literally every single person. I've had a drippy faucet in my bathroom for 5 years. And like, it's fine. You have a problem. Yeah, I want to solve it. But like, there's other things and it's okay. I just mop it up. We're fine, right? So understanding the severity of the problem, the timing of when they want to solve that, if they actually feel like solving it with me in this way is the right thing. So at the end of the day, if somebody acknowledges a problem, it's not time to sell. You've got two more steps to go before you can actually get there. And don't assume because they're talking to you that it means they want to solve the problem right now with you. It absolutely does not. It means they are open to the idea of solving that problem, but they may not know how to solve it. They might not know how much it costs. They may not know the urgency of their own issue because you're probably talking to somebody who's buying a tool on behalf of somebody else. And they're in that early exploratory phase. And the other thing is the kinder the prospect, the harder it is to sell to them, which is a weird thing to say because kind prospects will yes you the entire way. And they don't know how to cut you loose because they don't want to ruin the relationship that you've built. So your job is to keep process in mind. How do I make sure that I'm guiding them and asking the difficult questions? Have I told you enough to make you want to see a demo of this product, a more in-depth demo of the product? Great. Do you feel like this is enough of a solution where maybe we should start to bring in your leadership? Okay, great. Ask those difficult questions because they don't know your process. They don't know how to buy your technology. You have to guide them.
Wow. And how do we, you said something important there, the kinder the prospect. What do you say? The kinder the prospect, the more
the harder it is to sell to them.
How do you give people permission to say no? What does that sound like when you're talking to a prospect?
Could sound all kinds of ways. Right. Mm-hmm. The first is, if at any point you don't feel like this is a fit, I want you to let me know because your time is too valuable. And I'm going to give you plenty of opportunities to go ahead and let me know that as well. And I want you to feel safe doing that. Right. Just telling other human beings that that's okay is a really, really good thing. Now, if you're talking to an HR buyer, an enablement buyer, a learning and development buyer, that usually goes over really well. If you're talking to like a VP of sales or a CRO, you can say, I'll assume that if at some point you don't feel like this is a fit, you'll let me know. Right. Mm-hmm. So the way that you communicate with folks based on their role and how they're approaching the problem is different, but making no okay is something that I'm a fan of just talking about. Like, hey, no is okay. If this isn't a fit for you, that's all right. We're going to save both of us time. And in fact, if it's not a fit for you, I'm not going to ask you why it's not a fit for you to annoy you and try to overcome your objection. I'm going to ask because I might actually have a product referral for you that is a fit. Right. And so now you've also just bought yourself permission to do the classic, why not? Right. Like you were going to do it anyway. You were going to try to overcome the objection. But now you're saying like, look, if you tell me no, and I have questions, it's not to be obnoxious. It's not to be punitive. It's because maybe I have a referral that can actually help you with that problem that you do need to solve right now. And it's not with us. And then can I just keep in touch with you? Is there any element of this that you think down the road, 3, 6, 9 months, this might be helpful? And if so, I'd love to keep the relationship going. So there's ways throughout the process to, again, it's that creative element of being a human, which feels weird to talk about, but just like, you know what they're thinking. You know what your prospect is thinking. They know you know. There's this like unspoken thing in every sales conversation. So I'm a big fan of just bringing that to light. And now we all know where we stand. And selling in the light, while it seems difficult, is actually easier than selling in the dark.
Ooh, there you go. Mic drop.
Done.
It's the long game. Everything right. You do, it's the long game, which I appreciate. I want to ask two final questions. This has been so, so good. So thank you for everything that you've shared. We are, you know, as we record this end of the year, going into a new year, obviously people will be listening to this years down the road as well. But, you know, at the time of us recording this, it's end of 2023. There's so much conversation about what's next in the world of sales. How do we win with AI replacing people's roles and jobs? And there's a lot of different elements there. But what would be one thing that someone listening should be thinking about going into the new year in order to be successful? Are there any parting words of wisdom that you think, just watching how the landscape is evolving and your own lived experience, what parting word of wisdom would you leave people with to be successful moving forward?
I relentlessly seek balance. And I don't mean that in like a, listen, go get a massage, right? Like, it's not as easy to achieve the kind of balance when people say balance, what they think that they mean. But what I mean is, you can doom scroll all day on LinkedIn or Facebook or Instagram or TikTok or any, and you can doom scroll and you can get really, really worried. And a really good practice professionally is, when I read something that seems negative or scares me or makes me feel like it threatens my job, right? Is AI going to replace all salespeople? Try to seek out another point of view on it, right? So I just read something that felt like a lot of gloom and doom. I'm going to try to seek out a different opinion on that, right? And a different opinion could sound like, yeah, could AI technology take over all of us? I guess objectively it could. Will it? No. I actually think what's going to happen with AI is it's going to go from replacing people to making them even stronger, right? When you think about applications of AI that are not doing your job for you, but helping you learn how to do your job a little bit better, that's how I think AI is going to eventually kind of merge in with people, at least for the foreseeable future. So anytime that you are reading something negative, it is one flash in a pan point in time. And I promise you, there is something else positive that's happening if you seek that out. And so go find something positive, find some good news. And just remember that we are all here today because we've made it through 100% of our hardest days. And like I always say, if it looks dark, you're planted, you're not buried. And so just wait to sprout a little bit and you'll be okay.
I love that. I love that. Wow. That's perfect. Christina, tell everyone where they can connect with you.
Yeah. So you can find me on LinkedIn. I'm Christina Brady. Happy to connect with all of you. Happy to get to know all of you. Please reach out. I love building relationships and I love helping as much as I love learning. So I'm sure every individual that reaches out to me, I have something incredible that I can learn.
Amazing. This was so fun. Thank you. I learned so much and I appreciate how clearly you delivered true, like sound bites we can be using, how you demonstrate the long game in sales as well. And then just also that powerful piece at the end, it's all perspective. It's all, which side are you going to look at of the situation? So incredible. Thank you so, so much for your time and for being here.
Thank you for having me. This was wonderful. Thank you.
Amazing. Amazing. To you, my listener, I know you got so much out of this episode. I did. I was taking notes the whole time and I learned a lot too. So please go connect with Christina. We'll link her information in the show notes. As always, thank you so much for being a listener of She Sells Radio and I'll see you on our next episode. Bye for now.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Taking the Lead. If you're looking for more inspiring stories from women leaders in B2B tech, then visit us at motionagency.io/takingthelead.